So it's wonderful to be back with you for the few weeks until the middle of August. We're going to be doing a kind of a Heinz 57, taking something from here and taking something from there. But I think what we're going to do starting August 17th is, and for a good part of the fall, is we're going to spend some time in the book of Genesis. And we're going to start at the beginning and try to piece together what it's all about. So if you haven't read the book of Genesis before, you may want to, as you're getting up in the morning and having your first cup of coffee, maybe start reading some of the book of Genesis, or in the evening after you've had a hard day and you've got your feet up and you don't like anything on TV, you might want to crack open and read the book of Genesis, and we'll start looking at it together beginning around the middle of August. Pamela sends her greetings to you. We got in last night, and she was just absolutely bushed, and so she's at home catching up on some much-needed rest. And since she's not here, I want to tell a story on her. When we first got married, I was a student in seminary, finishing my doctoral work, and she was our breadwinner. She was a secretary at Dallas Theological Seminary, and she wasn't making much money at all, and we were just barely scraping by. I can remember sweating just buckets of perspiration every time that time of the month came around when we had to pay our bills just to see if we could scrape enough together. And when we first got married, I was unable to afford the kind of ring for her that I wanted her to have. And so on this trip that I just took to Auckland, where I was part of a conference there, and I stopped in Sydney and in Singapore to take care of some other stuff. I snuck out of the hotel one afternoon, went down to the concierge and asked them what some of the best jewelry stores were in Singapore. And so one afternoon, getting away from business and sneaking away to one of the stores in Singapore, I went to one of the fine jewelry stores there and asked to see some rings. And it's really quite something the way in which they present rings, isn't it? You all have seen, I imagine, the movie Romancing the Stone. Everybody here seen that movie or at least heard of it? You know what the phrase means, don't you? It's a jeweler's term. And what the Romancing the Stone is all about is the treatment that the jeweler gives to a stone in order to present it to the buyer, enhancing and providing the best show for the stone. So when they bring out a fine diamond, they don't put it on a glass counter. They don't just take it out of a drawer and kind of throw it on a glass counter like they were throwing dice, because it's hard to see the stone against the clarity of the glass counter. So what they do is they bring out a lovely velvet mat and they put it on the counter, and then they if they're really good jewelers, they're going to position a couple of lights so that the lights shine in a particular way on the mat, and then they bring out the stone and they put just the stone right there on the mat all by itself. And they turn it this way so you can see the stone from this angle. They turn it that way so you can see the stone from that angle. If you're really hard by, then they may even give you a special a glass to put over your eye so you can look into the stone and see its clarity and the precision of the cut. Romancing the stone is presenting the jewel in such a way that you can see all the beauty, all the glitter, all the precision, all the loveliness of the stone. So when I was in Singapore, I wasn't buying Pamela a diamond this time. I was buying her another ring. But the same show went on. The jeweler absolutely, well, romances me. Right, a special chair is pulled up. I'm offered drinks. I'm offered snacks, and of course the romantic dance is on. And so I'm being romanced by the jeweler. The stone is being presented. The ring is being shown in a particular way. So, you know, 15 minutes into it, you know, I'm sold. The jeweler knows what it's all about. She is trying to present the ring, the stone, in the finest possible light so that the purchaser has no option at the end but to take the ring. So when I came back, Pamela had a new ring. And so there we are sitting on the couch my first night back home. And I take the ring out, and it's in a box that she opens. And of course, she's all surprised and shocked. And she opens it up. And of course, the first words out of, well, what is this? What were you doing thinking of me and buying rings when you were in Singapore? And I take it out of the box, and I slip it on her finger, and I say, honey, this is so you would know I'd do it all over again. And this is the story of romancing, right? You present something in the best possible light so that the purchaser has no option but to fall in love with what's being romanced. That's what God, through the Apostle John, is doing in the first chapter of the Gospel. He is romancing Jesus Christ. He is presenting Jesus Christ in its best possible light, so that by the time you have finished reading John chapter 1, you have no option but to fall in love and to give your heart, your soul, and your life to Jesus Christ. In John chapter 1, John the Apostle takes Jesus Christ as if he's a jeweler. And he places Jesus Christ not on a glass counter in which Jesus Christ can blend in with the counter, but he takes Jesus Christ and he places him on a black velvet mat. He shines lights on him. He turns him this way. He turns him that way so that you have no option but to walk out of the chapter completely captivated with Jesus Christ. John chapter 1. Dr. Maley, that's just before John chapter 2. It wasn't a stone. It was a, now, this is a story we told when Pamela wasn't here, right? It was a platinum wedding band. So the Word became flesh is the title that we have of this chapter in my Bible. But what's happening here is that Jesus Christ is being presented in the light, the best possible light, so you have no option but to fall in love with Him. How many of you have heard the phrase, perhaps all of your Christian lives, that goes something like this: receive or accept Jesus Christ. Receive or accept Jesus Christ. It's a very popular phrase. You know, it originates from John chapter 1. As a matter of fact, look with me at verse 12. That language that floats off of our tongues so easily, accept Jesus Christ, receive Jesus Christ, comes right from John chapter 1. And verse 12, notice, yet to all who received Him, to those who believed in His name, He gave the right to become children of God. To all who received Him, to those who believed in His name, He gave the right to become children of God. John chapter 1 is John's attempt to describe what it means to receive Jesus Christ. We use that phrase all the time. But when John says it, he has some very particular ideas about Jesus Christ in mind. For the Apostle John, to receive Jesus Christ is not to receive Him without believing particular things about Him. Notice how the two terms are used synonymously in verse 12, right? Yet to all who received Him, comma, to those who believed in his name, comma. In other words, to receive him is to believe in his name. For the Apostle John, to receive is to believe. It's not to have some emotional experience, although that can come. It's not to have some feeling, although that can be a part of it. To receive Jesus Christ, for the Apostle John, is to believe particular things about him. And the first chapter of John is all about the things that you're to believe about Jesus Christ when you receive him. Because if you receive him, if you believe these things about him, you automatically, as a benefit, become a child of God. What's the first thing that John wants you to believe? What's the first thing that he wants you to receive as truth about Jesus Christ? It comes in the first verse. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. The title, The Word, is John's special term for Jesus Christ. It is John's special title for Jesus Christ. He uses it more than any other book of the Bible. And it's the term, it's the title that John has selected as the special title that he's going to use for Jesus. You all have special titles for special people in your lives. You may call your wife sweetheart. You may call her honeydew. You may refer to your husband as Twinkle Toes or as Buttercup. I don't know what you call these special people, but you all have special titles, special names for people that are special in your life. For the Apostle John, the name The Word is the special title that he uses for Jesus. What he wants you to understand by it is that Jesus Christ is singularly, uniquely, and exclusively the person who most appropriately speaks of God. No one shows you who God is. No one demonstrates, no one manifests God as clearly, as perfectly, as brilliantly as Jesus does. For he is the Word. He speaks of the Father. The first thing that John wants you to believe about Jesus Christ is that he is uniquely, exclusively, and most perfectly the one who can show you God. Without him, you will never know who God is the way in which you're supposed to know who God is. It is impossible to know God without his Son, Jesus Christ. The only one who can show you God most brilliantly in his person is not Moses, it's not David, it's not Abraham, it's not Ezekiel, it's not Paul or Peter. It is uniquely Jesus Christ. So the first thing that John wants you to believe when you receive Jesus is that he uniquely is the one who demonstrates and manifests to me, who reveals to me God. Well, rightly so, because he was with God in the beginning, verse 2. In other words, he's been with God the Father the whole time. God the Father didn't create him. There wasn't any time in which the Son did not exist. The Word, Jesus Christ, the Son of God, is eternal because he was with God in the beginning. In the beginning was the Word, and he was with God the Father in the beginning. And so the second thing that John wants you to know about Jesus Christ, the second thing that you must believe in order to receive Jesus Christ, is that he is eternal as God the Father is eternal. There was no time in which he didn't exist. There was no time in which he was not. Jesus Christ, the Son of God, is as eternal as God the Father is eternal. So to receive Jesus Christ is not to have an idea about Jesus Christ that you put together. It's to believe in Jesus Christ the way in which John is presenting him to you. He's taken Jesus Christ, he's put him on a black velvet mat, he is shining lights on him, so at this point you are to believe two things about him. One, he uniquely shows us God the Father in a way in which no one else can show us God the Father. If you want to know God the Father, you have got to receive Jesus Christ. If you want to know God, you must first of all know Jesus Christ. There is no knowledge of God. There is no vision of God. There is no sight of God. There is no appearance of God without your receiving Jesus Christ. And the second thing that he wants you to know about him is that one of the reasons why he can display God to you most perfectly is because he is as eternal as God the Father is eternal. As a matter of fact, that's not all. If you want to receive Jesus Christ the way that John is talking about receiving him, look at verse 1 again. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Not only is he the one who can show you God most perfectly, not only is he the one who is eternal as God the Father is eternal, but his nature is the same as the nature of God the Father. In the same way in which God the Father is God, Jesus Christ is God. All the infinite knowledge that God the Father has, Jesus has. All the infinite power that God the Father has, Jesus has. All the infinite eternality that the Father has, Jesus has. We have big names for these terms, right? We say that to the same degree that the Father is omniscient, all-knowing, Jesus is omniscient. To the same degree that God the Father is omnipotent, all-powerful, Jesus is omnipotent. To the same degree that God the Father is not limited by space because he is omnipresent, Jesus Christ is omnipresent. To the same degree that God the Father is not limited by time because he is eternal, Jesus Christ is eternal. As John takes Jesus out and puts him on the black velvet mat and shines lights on him and turns him this way and turns him that way and gives you a special magnifying glass through which you can look into the stone, John is saying he can show you God in a way in which no one else can. He is as eternal as God is eternal. As a matter of fact, he is like God in every way in which God the Father is God. To accept Jesus Christ means to believe specific things about him. To receive Jesus Christ means to believe specific things about him. Look at what else John says you must believe if you are to receive Jesus. Through him, verse 3, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. The next thing that you're supposed to believe about Jesus Christ, if you want to be able to say that you've received him and accepted him, is that you believe that he is the creator of everything. He is the creator of all things. He is your creator. He is the one who made you. God the Father made you through Jesus Christ, the Word of God. Every tree, every rock, every moon, every planet, every sun in our solar system has Jesus Christ as its author. Jesus Christ isn't some mere human being. He's not some mere angel. Jesus Christ is the author of the universe. For notice what John says. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. To receive Jesus Christ, to accept Jesus Christ, means that you believe that Jesus Christ is the author of everything that exists. He is your creator. He is the creator of everybody else. and he is the one who is responsible for bringing everything into being. John is taking Jesus Christ out of a drawer, and he's placing him carefully on a black velvet mat. He is shining lights on him, turning him this way, turning him that way, so you can see the important and essential features of who Jesus Christ is. Notice what else. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. In other words, not only is Jesus Christ the creator of all things, the one through whom the God the Father has made everything, but in him is the very principle of life. You will never have true life. You will never live. You will never experience life as it is meant by God to be experienced until you believe that Jesus Christ is life itself. He is the principle, the source, the giver of life that is true and real. Life doesn't come from someplace else. Life originates with Jesus Christ. He is life and the source of true life. Notice verse 6 and following. There came a man who was sent from God. His name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all men might believe. Why? Because to receive is to believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to every man was coming into the world. Verses 6 through 9 are thrown in by John into chapter 1 in order to make this point. You may really, 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 really like John the Baptist. And as Baptists, we have a good right to love John the Baptist because we're Baptists. You may really, really, really like John the Baptist. You may really, really, really like President Bush. You may really, really, really like your spouse. You may really, 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 really love your children. You may really, 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 really love Winnie the Pooh. But here's the point that John is making. None of them, none of them are Jesus Christ. Love your children. Love your spouse. Love your parents. Love your friends. Love the people in your life. But never, ever, ever mistake any of them for Jesus Christ. Because he and he alone demands and deserves your utmost love and your utmost faithfulness. In other words, what was going on in the first century when John is writing this gospel is that a bunch of people were really in love with John the Baptist. John the Baptist was the first on the scene. But remember that John the Baptist was doing his ministry long before Jesus started his. And so people were flocking to John the Baptist. They were John the Baptist's followers. And John the Evangelist has to write in order to tell people, John the Baptist may be cool. He may be a really great preacher. He may be a really great person. He may have everything that you think you want in somebody. But never, ever mistake John the Baptist for the real thing. He's just a poor imitation of Jesus Christ. He's merely a witness to Jesus Christ. In order to receive Jesus Christ, as John is teaching us to receive Jesus Christ, we cannot put Jesus on the black velvet mat surrounded by a bunch of other gems. There is no room for receiving Jesus Christ where there is competition with anybody else for the supreme place in our lives. When we look at Jesus Christ, the only stone on the mat is Jesus Christ. He is there alone. He is there uniquely. He is there supremely. One of the questions which John, as he's writing this chapter, would ask you today, Are there people, are there things, are there valuables that compete in your life for the spot which Jesus Christ uniquely is to hold? Are there people, are there things, are there valuables, are there goals which compete in your life for the unique and the exclusive devotion which you are to have for Jesus Christ and Jesus Christ alone? Never mistake Him for anybody else, and never replace Him with anybody else. In order to receive Jesus Christ, then, John the Evangelist wants us to know some other things. Verse 10, He was in the world, and though the world was made through Him, the world did not recognize Him. He came to that which was His own, but His own did not receive Him. In other words, John wants you to know that Jesus Christ has experienced rejection. Jesus Christ is not somebody who came into this world and who had a victorious and abundant life. He was not someone who came into this world and floated from one success to another success. Jesus wasn't someone who came into this world with a huge bank account and with a ready-made family and with all the comforts and all the glories and all the prestige that this world has to offer. When Jesus Christ came to the world that He had created, He came to a world that rejected Him, that despised Him, that wanted to have nothing whatsoever to do with Him. This is why John makes the appeal to you in verse 12, "Yet to all who received Him a blessing comes, and that blessing is that you become a child of God." John wants you to know something else. If you're one of those people that doesn't float from dream to dream, from accomplished goal to accomplished goal, if you're one of those people who have had wonderful dreams for your life that have never come to fulfillment, if you're one of those people that have wanted to do things with your life that you've never been able to do, if you're one of those people that have just suffered from suffer to suffering, John the Apostle wants you to know that Jesus Christ is not a success story. Jesus Christ is not a success story. He is one who came to the world that He created, and they rejected Him. Anybody here feel rejected? Anybody here not a success story? John wants you to know that you're in great company, because Jesus came to that which He had made, and it rejected Him. I can imagine in the room of this size, there are people here who have had dreams that have never been fulfilled and never will be this side of resurrection. There are women in this room who wanted children, but they were never able to have children. They got pregnant a few times, but each pregnancy ended with tears and with great agony and with great weeping, and they were never able to have children. And because of circumstances beyond their control, they were never able to adopt them. And so you may have had a dream that has never been fulfilled. There's probably somebody in this room who is facing an illness that no one else in this room knows about. Maybe you shared it with your spouse, but none of us know. Maybe cancer is lurking in your body right now. Maybe you're suffering from a heart defect. Maybe just this week you got news that your lifespan isn't going to be as long as you thought it was going to be. And you're here this morning by God's grace, and you're just holding on with your fingernails. And dreams that you have, you now realize, are never going to be fulfilled. There's probably some guy here who wanted a career that he never got. He wanted to be this or he wanted to be that, and he's now realizing that as he enters this next phase of his life, that that's just never going to happen. I don't know which dream of yours has been busted. I don't know which hope of yours has never been filled. But John wants you to know this morning that you're in good company. Because Jesus Christ himself was utterly and completely rejected by those that he had created. And so he is a wonderful companion for those who have also been rejected. Because you see, if you're a success story, Jesus Christ probably doesn't have any attraction for you. Because if you're a success story, you might have already replaced him with somebody or something else. What does it mean to accept Jesus Christ? Well, it means to accept him as the one who was rejected. But notice verse 14, the Word became flesh and lived for a while among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. The next thing that John wants you to know that you must believe if you are a person who can say, I have received Jesus Christ, I have accepted Jesus Christ, is that you must believe that he became human. You must believe that he became flesh and lived for a while among us. In other words, Jesus Christ didn't stay up in the glories and the comforts of heaven. He came down into our world and he took our humility, our humanness, our flesh upon himself, and he lived and he dwelt among us. He placed himself into our circumstances and he bore our burdens. What it means to accept Jesus Christ is to accept him as the eternal God the Son, who is very God, who is the creator of all things, who is the principle and the source of life itself, is the one who was rejected and despised by those that he had created. And although he was rejected and despised by those who he had created, he still became one of them because he adored them, although they despised and rejected him. To accept Jesus Christ, to receive Jesus Christ, means to believe specific things about him. There is no jewel in your collection. There is no bill in your wallet. There isn't a vehicle in your garage. There isn't a home among your houses. There isn't a person in your life who is as beautiful, who is as wonderful, who is as majestic, who is as dramatic, who is as perfect, who is as lovely, who is as beautiful, who is deserving of your entire faithfulness and life as Jesus Christ is. If you've been a Christian for many years, I appeal to you this morning to recenter Jesus in your life and to question whether or not you've begun to allow things to creep in which are now in competition with him. And if you're here this morning and you've never received Jesus Christ, if you've never believed these things about Jesus Christ before, I plead with you to do that this morning. Anybody in our directorship here, and Mike, Dr. Madeley, anybody here would love to speak with you about making that momentous decision. To accept, to receive Jesus Christ means to believe these wonderful and these sad things about him. And so, Father, we pray that by the power of the Spirit, you would help us to remove everything that's in competition with Jesus Christ. By the power of the Spirit that indwells us, would you help us to just sweep every other gem off of that mat and to place Jesus Christ on that mat alone? For he is the only one who is worthy. We ask it in the name of the Son. And by the power of the Spirit. Amen.